Morning comes from the book of Samuel, chapter 18, verses 1 to 9, and we're continuing our series of looking at the life of David, hitting just some of the highlights. When David had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would not let him return to his father's house. And then Jonathan made a covenant with David, because he loved him as his own soul. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that he was wearing and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. And as a result, Saul set him over the army, and all the people, even the servants of Saul, approved of him. And as they were coming home, when David returned from killing the Philistine, the women came out of all the towns of Israel singing and dancing to meet the king Saul, with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they made merry, "Saul has killed his thousands, and David his tens of thousands." And Saul was very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom?" So Saul eyed David from that day on. The word of the Lord. So we're working our way through the life of David, and this week we are looking at David's friendship with Solomon. But let's remind ourselves of how we got here. David is a little shepherd boy, like the choir reminded us with their song. He is the youngest of eight brothers. He is living a rural, unexciting life. And then Samuel shows up, the prophet of God, who anoints David, says, "You are going to be the next king of Israel." God says, "I choose you, David." And next thing David knows, not only has he been anointed as the next king of Israel, he finds himself in the front lines as Israel is doing battle with their arch enemies, the Philistines. And the Philistines trot out their superhero Goliath, 9'6", covered from head to toe in unpenetrable armor, and here comes David, the little shepherd boy from Israel, and he slings his stone and takes Goliath down, and Israel charges the Philistines. They rout them. They annihilate their enemies, and David is the toast of the town. He is the hero. He is the victor of the day. And so he is ushered into Saul's court to tell everybody about this amazing thing that he's done so Saul can celebrate him and thank him, because David is now going to be ushered into the royal family. And he gets there and he meets somebody named Jonathan. Now, we know David's story, right? He grew up small, insignificant, unimportant in this tiny little town called Bethlehem, taking care of sheep. Jonathan is the heir to the throne. He was born and raised with a silver spoon in his mouth. From the time he was little, he had cooks and guards and the best teachers that you could have. He had everything that the world could offer. He was groomed from the time he was tiny to become the next king of Israel. He had it all. There were probably stories in the tabloids about Jonathan all the time. Everybody was watching his every move. And here these two guys come into the same space and they become friends. These guys were not supposed to be friends. And yet the text says as soon as they came together, their souls are bound to one another, which is this great image that somebody has tied a rope around the two of them that has an untieable knot. They are so connected, they are so together that there's nothing that can separate these two guys. And what I love about the word that's used in Hebrew that they use for bound together, one of the undertones is that these guys are going to make mischief together. Now, I don't know about you, but my best friends growing up were the ones who you got into a little bit of mischief with, right? The ones who, when you said, "I have a brilliant idea," they said, "I'm in, let's do it." They were the ones who you knew that when you were doing those things you weren't supposed to do, and when mom and dad caught you or the teacher or whoever it was, they were not going to rat you out. They would stand there and take the punishment right by your side. They were mischief makers, and mischief loves company. This is what the text is getting at. David and Jonathan are just beginning to make mischief together. And Jonathan makes a pact with David. This is the original pinky promise. This is the spit in the palm of your hand, and you swear that from this day forward we will do such and such. And so Jonathan, in front of the whole court, all these people who have watched him grow up from a little boy who have been invested in him becoming the next king of Israel, Jonathan gets up and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make." And he takes off his armor, and he takes off his kingly robe, and he takes his sword, and he takes his other weapons, and he hands them to David, the little shepherd boy from Bethlehem. And the crowd is silent because he's making a pact. And what he is saying to everybody who is present and to David is he's saying, "I am giving the kingship to you." He is symbolically handing over his right to be the next king of Israel. This is a big moment. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody expected this. What he's saying is, look, David, God's hand is upon your life, and I don't want to fight with you over the throne. I don't want to compete with you and spend the rest of my life fighting against you. David, I want to be in your corner. I want to be on your team. I want to be on your side. I want to be your friend, even if it means that I have to let go of the throne and all of the glory and the riches and the wealth and all the things that come with it. He says, David, my friendship with you is more important than being the king of Israel. And you could have heard a pin drop in that room. David says, friendship is more valuable than power. Friendship is more valuable than stuff. Friendship is more valuable than prestige and honor and all the things that come with the throne. And he hands it over to David. This is a radical moment of friendship. Jonathan is willing to become less so that David can become more. He humbles himself. He sacrifices for David because he sees in David a possibility, a capacity that he himself could never ascribe to. And he has that moment to choose. Either I'm going to push back against this and David's going to be a threat, or I will choose to help him become the best possible version of himself that he can be. I don't know if you've had friends like Jonathan in your life. People who look at you and say, "I believe in you." But that's what Jonathan does for David. And that's what we need. Friends like that who will help us, who will come alongside us, who will sacrifice for us, so that we can be the best possible version of ourselves. Friends who will get into mischief with us, push the boundaries from time to time. Jonathan doesn't let their differences stand in the way. The fact that David is from a different socioeconomic class, that he didn't grow up with the same things that he has, David looks at the heart the same way that God looks at the heart of David and sees a person of value and meaning and substance and character, and he says, "You know what? I want to spend my life being with you." Now, I think we have to take a moment to step back amidst our culture that sees David and Jonathan and looks at this love that they have for each other and automatically says, David and Jonathan are homosexual. It is really important that we recognize as we read this text that there is nowhere in this text where that is what this is saying. And I'm going to get on my little soapbox because to me this is so important. Soapbox moment, okay? We stand and are part of a culture that says men can't have real, deep, meaningful relationships without there being something else going on. A lot of men live in fear. Well, I can't really be vulnerable. I can't be honest. I can't sacrifice because people are going to talk. When I grew up, we used to do what we called the "I'm not gay" release hug, because God forbid there be too much contact and people might wonder. We've lost the space for David and Jonathan relationships in our culture as men, where we can come alongside each other and be honest and authentic and vulnerable and not have to worry about any hidden undertones. The text says that Jonathan loves David, and the word that's used is chesed. Say that with me, chesed. Isn't that a great, get your in there, right? Okay, chesed is the love that God has for Israel. It is an abiding love. It is a consistent love. The actual word means long of nose. God is long of nose. Why? I don't know. But he is long of nose, and that means God is long-suffering. He is faithful. He is consistent. He is persistent. He is pursuing in his love for Israel. This is the same type of love that Jonathan has for David. This is not an awkward, uncomfortable love. This is a love that says, "I see you, I value you for who you are, and I want to be in your corner. I want to do life together with you." Jonathan looks at David, this guy who is stepping into his space, potentially taking his throne, and instead of fighting and competing against him, he says, I'm going to support you and help you be the best possible version of yourself that you can be. And now we're going to look at Saul. The text, when originally Saul meets David, Saul is the king, it says that Saul loves David. So both Saul and Jonathan start out loving David. Saul loves David because Saul has these crazy experiences where there's an evil spirit that comes upon him, and the only thing that will calm Saul is that David will come and he plays his harp, and that soothes him. And it says that Saul loves David basically as long as David does what Saul wants him to do, right? As long as David shows up and makes his life better and easier and takes away his pain and his suffering, Saul is more than happy to be friends with David as long as there's this massive power imbalance. Some of us have been in friendships like that, right? Where one person gives and one person takes. And as long as you maintain that, oh, it's great, right? But that's not a friendship. But suddenly David is rising and growing in prestige and honor. He kills Goliath. And as they come back to Jerusalem for the hero's welcome, right? They walk in and the ladies start singing. Now, this is not the only story of ladies causing some turmoil between male friendships. And so they come in and the ladies are playing their tambourines and they're singing and they're dancing and they sing the first line of their little song that they've come up with, which is, Saul has killed his thousands and Saul's riding on his horse thinking, this is great. They're celebrating me. And then they sing the second line. Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands. Saul doesn't like that quite as much. David has risen from the little shepherd boy, and not only is he equal, he's risen higher than Saul in the eyes of the people. I love that the text says even Saul's servants prefer David over Saul. Everybody likes David. And Saul looks at this and he says, I'm going to compete with you. David is competition. David is a challenge. David is stepping on his toes. He's invading his space. He might even take over his throne. Jonathan and Saul both look at the same guy. Jonathan chooses to respond in love and care and compassion and sacrificial friendship. And Saul says, it's on. And I'm going to win. And it's fascinating to me that it starts with this really petty little thing of the line of a song, sung by women who Saul doesn't even know, but it kind of gets in there and it grates on his nerves. Saul is not the only one who has had a fight because of something stupid and petty, right? Sometimes we find ourselves fighting and you think, why in the world are we even fighting? And you trace it back and you're like, really? We're fighting over that? It's amazing how little petty things can begin to erode and destroy deep friendships. The story of Saul is incredibly sad. Here he is, the king of Israel. And yet, as he begins to compete with David, he gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And David grows and grows. Saul becomes bitter and angry, even violent, trying to kill David. He becomes obsessed with trying to eliminate David, eliminate the threat that David has become. And it starts with this simple, petty little song. Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands. Competition is the death of friendship. Competition is the death of friendship. Competition will suck the life and the joy and the happiness out of a friendship. And we are really good at competing, aren't we? We live in a culture that celebrates competition. Most of us, or many of us, are going to go home after church. We're going to watch one of our favorite football teams. And we are going to celebrate in competition. But it doesn't just happen on the TV and out there on the football field. It happens in real life relationships, right? We one-up somebody. Oh, you got a story? Let me tell you my story. You're having an argument? I'm going to have the last word. I don't even care what the argument's about. I'm going to win it. Because we begin to be self-focused. And it's not about friendship and relationship. It's about, I'm going to get mine. We begin to keep those invisible tallies inside of our head, right? Well, I've done the dishes so many times, and I've cooked dinner, and I did this, and I did this, and well, you've been out three nights this week, and I've only been, and you know what I mean? And next thing you know, you're keeping lists and you're keeping tracks because it's, well, I'm not getting my share. This is an unbalanced relationship. You're getting the better end of the deal. What happened to loving and caring and sacrificing because of the value and the dignity that we see in another person? And competition can seep in and begin to erode and undermine the beauty that can be had in deep friendships. When we read these stories and we hear these stories, it's fun when we can associate ourselves with the heroes, right? When we can associate ourselves with Jonathan and David and all the good and pleasant and beautiful things, but the reality is, not only do we probably have a little bit of Jonathan in us, a little bit of David, there's also a little bit of Saul, right? There's a little bit of the competition. There's a little bit of the selfishness. There's a little bit of the need to be in control and be in power and control the narrative, whether we like it or not. When we see our friends' beautiful posts on Facebook about their perfect family Halloween costumes, we get a little bit bitter. When we see that while we are suffering during the winter and the cold of PA, they are flying down to Disneyland and a world, whichever one's down in Florida, and they are having fun. When we see that so-and-so got a job promotion, and so-and-so got a new car, and so-and-so got this and that, we can't allow ourselves to be happy for them because we're competing with them. That's the Saul rising up within us that's never happy. When I was in high school, I tried out for the role of the Artful Dodger in the musical Oliver. And one of my closest friends also tried out for the role of the Artful Dodger. This story doesn't end well. Because only one of us could be the Artful Dodger. And so we both got up and we did the best we can. I could still sing you the song, which I'm not going to. Consider yourself one of us, right? It was ingrained in there. And I felt good about my audition. And so auditions were on Tuesday. Friday at lunch, we found out who got the part. Friday lunch rolls around, book it out of class, I run to where it's posted, and there's this crowd of people already, so you know, you fight your way through the crowd, I'm looking for my name, and my name is not on the cast list. Artful Dodger, Zach Ferris. Oh, it still hurts, right? I could not be happy for Zach. Because all I could think about was my own frustration. Well, his mom was the director. That's why he got it, right? He had an unfair advantage. And maybe that's true. I'll never know. But point in case, right? End of story. No. And so a couple months went by. They rehearsed. And it was the night of the opening performance. And so it was the whole high school was there. We roll into the auditorium. And inside of my head, I'm thinking, oh, I hope he falls. I hope his voice cracks. I hope, you know, all those things. And Zach was amazing. He stole the show. He was incredible. And afterwards, everybody is around him and celebrating him. And all I could think was, that should have been me. Right? And that little bit of Saul just came right up. The inability to celebrate the gifts of others. And it was soul-sucking for me, and it sapped the joy out of the friendship that we had. It's so easy to be Saul. It's so easy to be Saul. My prayer for us is that we would be more like Jonathan, and that in the places and in the relationships and in the moments where Saul shows up, that we would humble ourselves and confess and admit our wrongs and say, I screwed up. Would you forgive me? Would you give me another chance? Because I don't want our friendship to be like this. I don't want to be fighting against each other. I want to enjoy each other. And friends, we can live like Jonathan because God has loved each one of us. We can love sacrificially because God has sacrificed for us. Jonathan gives up his throne. That's a pretty big deal. God sends his son to die for us. We can engage in deep, authentic relationships with each other because we are in relationship with the living God, who has modeled for us in the person of Jesus Christ what real friendship looks like. My hope for us as we walk out of here this morning is that we would be honest. Are there relationships where I've been behaving like Saul and I need to go and I need to confess? Is there a Jonathan in your life who you haven't recognized recently that you need to reach out to and say, you were in my corner when nobody else was. Thank you. Because it's hard being Jonathan sometimes when you feel like David doesn't notice that you're there. When you feel like David doesn't recognize the things that you have sacrificed so that he can be successful. May we be keenly aware that there are these two paths set before us, the path of Jonathan and the path of Saul, and we kind of vacillate between the two. But when we begin to go the way of Saul, may we bring ourselves back in humility. Friendship is the greatest gift in life. The true wealth that we have is not measured in how much money we got in a bank account somewhere. It's in the depth of friendships that we have with one another. May we live as if that is true, as the beloved friends of God. Let us pray. God, thank you that while we were still sinners, you loved us. That even when we act like Saul and we're bitter and angry and resentful, that you are still faithful with your chesed love. Lord, thank you that there is nothing that we can do that will separate us from your love. Thank you that you believe in us, even when we don't believe in ourselves. Lord, give us the strength and the grace and the compassion and the humility to love each other the way that you have loved us. And we ask this in Jesus' holy and precious name.